Hello and welcome to Ox Talk for Tuesday the 25th of November 2025. My name is Guy and I've compiled the edition for this week. News items have been selected from local Oxford papers by Patricia Lee, Di Shaw and Margaret Simpson and recorded at home by Stephen Harness, Patricia Lee and Judith Piggott. We also have an article from our new Nature Walks contributor, Willow. The USBs have been copied and distributed by Michelle Lawful. Sunrise today is at 7:41 a.m. and sunset is at 4:02 p.m. Before the news, we mark some events which happened on November the 25th in history. In 1120, the White Ship disaster, in which a ship capsized near the Normandy coast while crossing the English Channel from France to England, transporting many nobles, including the heir to the English throne. About 300 people died, with only one survivor. Those who drowned included William Atheling, the only legitimate son and heir of Henry I of England, his half-siblings Matilda Fitzroy and Richard of Lincoln, Richard de Vranches, Earl of Chester, and Geoffrey Rydell, a royal justice of the time. With William Adeline's death, the king had no obvious successor, and his own death 15 years later set off a succession crisis and a period of civil war in England known as the Anarchy. In 1715, the first English patent ever to be granted to an American. The patent was for a new method of milling corn, and was also for machinery to clean and cure it. The inventor was Sybilla Wrighton Masters, though the patent was issued in her husband Thomas Masters' name, because women could not legally hold patents or own property at the time. Sybilla later received a second patent for making hats in 1716, also granted to her husband. In 1949, Gene Autry's single Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer appeared on the music charts, after songwriter Johnny Marks adapted a poem written by his brother-in-law, Robert L. May, for Montgomery Ward department stores. In 1963, US President John F. Kennedy was laid to rest at Arlington National Cemetery. Kennedy had been assassinated during an open-top presidential motorcade through Dealey Plaza in Dallas on the 22nd of November. In 1969, John Lennon returned his MBE. Lennon stated that this was in protest against Britain's involvement in the Nigeria-Biafra thing, against our support of America in Vietnam, and against Cold Turkey, a song he had written for the Plastic Ono band, slipping down the charts. Born on this day, in 1638, Catherine of Braganza, Portuguese Roman Catholic and Queen of Charles II of England, was born in Vila Viçosa, Portugal. Catherine was unpopular in England at the time due to her steadfast adherence to the Roman Catholic faith and was a special target of those involved in the Popish Plot, which was a fictitious conspiracy invented by Titus Oates that gripped the kingdoms of England and Scotland in anti-Catholic hysteria. In 1835, Andrew Carnegie, Scottish-American industrialist, steel tycoon and philanthropist, was born in Dunfermline, Scotland. Carnegie led the expansion of the American steel industry in the late 19th century and became one of the richest Americans in history. In 1955, Bruno Tonioli, Italian-British dancer, choreographer and television personality, was born in Ferrara, Italy. He is probably best known as a judge on Strictly Come Dancing, Dancing with the Stars and Britain's Got Talent. In 1959, Charles Kennedy, British politician and Liberal Democrat leader between 1999 and 2006, was born in Inverness, Scotland. He was the Member of Parliament for Ross, Skye and Lochaber from 1983 to 2015. And deaths on this day. In 1803, Joseph Wilton, English sculptor, died aged 83. Wilton was one of the founding members of the Royal Academy in 1768 and the Academy's third keeper. His numerous works include memorials to famous Britons in Westminster Abbey. In 2010, Bernard Matthews, English turkey farmer and founder of Bernard Matthews Farms, died aged 80. In the world of football, there are a number of deaths on this day. In 2005, George Best, Northern Irish footballer, died after suffering multiple organ failure, aged 59. In 2012, Dave Sexton, English football manager, died aged 82. In 2020, Diego Maradona, Argentinian forward, died from a heart attack, aged 60. Maradona was a World Cup winner in 1986 and voted FIFA Player of the 20th Century. In 2023, Terry Venables died aged 80. Venables was an English midfielder with Chelsea, Tottenham, Queen's Park Rangers and Crystal Palace, and manager of Crystal Palace, Queen's Park Rangers, Barcelona, Tottenham, England, Australia and Leeds United. And now on to the news. We hope you enjoy our selection of articles.
Devastated organisers of a huge fireworks display have apologised following a challenging event after which ticket holders were forced to wait more than 2 hours to leave the congested site. Abingdon Bonfire and Fireworks, organised by Explosive Events, took place at Abingdon Airfield on Saturday evening. Described as the UK's biggest fireworks display, the annual event is popular in Oxfordshire and beyond, with thousands attending. But organisers said they are truly sorry for those who left disappointed. In a statement, the Abingdon Bonfire and Fireworks team said, "We are truly heartbroken after what was a very challenging and emotional day for our team yesterday. While we won't go into the details right now, please know this, we are devastated that not everyone had the experience they deserved or expected. We put everything we have into this event, our time, our hearts, our energy, and when things don't go to plan, it hurts. To those who continue to support us, thank you. Your kind words and encouragement mean the world and have kept our team going through what has been an incredibly tough time. To those who left disappointed, we are truly sorry. That was never what we intended. The event takes an astronomical amount of work, planning and resources, and we genuinely give it everything we've got. We hear you, we understand the issues, and now we need to take some time as a team to reflect, process and carefully consider the future of Abingdon Bonfire and Fireworks. We'll begin by responding to the messages and emails over the coming days. We appreciate your patience and understanding while we do so." It comes after a number of people took to social media to complain about the traffic coming in and out of the event. This year, traffic management measures were put in place following problems last year, and on Saturday morning, Oxfordshire County Council warned motorists to expect significant delays and a high level of pedestrian activity in the area. Carl Mitchen-Sheed, Director of Explosive Events Group Limited, previously said, "To address previous concerns about traffic, organisers have also partnered with Buco Traffic and Safety to deliver an unprecedented traffic management scheme, backed by a temporary traffic regulation order from Oxfordshire County Council. The plan includes new access routes, two new gates and car parks and closed roads, creating a one-way system on approach roads to ease congestion."
The return of a fireworks display in Oxford has been hailed a success, with more than 20,000 people joining the fun. Oxford Round Table returned with its huge Oxford fireworks event in South Park on Saturday, November the 8th. The traditional display was the 57th annual event from the Oxford charity, which hosted its first display in 1967 and is run entirely by volunteers. This year, for the first time, the event included a low-noise display earlier in the evening, designed for families with young children and those sensitive to loud noises, to ensure it was accessible for everyone. But for those looking for booming fun, the rest of the evening provided plenty of riotous entertainment. 2 years ago, the display left the park at the bottom of Headington Hill, a badly rutted mud bath, and residents and friends of South Park complained about the damage. But the charity ditched the giant bonfire last year and ensured the ground was not damaged. This year, there were a number of 1-metre-wide mini bonfires as part of the celebrations, with the turf below fully protected, which organisers say were welcomed by the public. Joseph Garbutt, co-event director, told this newspaper, "More than 20,000 people happily attended the event. There was lots of positive feedback from vendors and customers. The park was not damaged, and the return of mini bonfires were a welcomed step by people. Locals who have complained to us in the past actually complimented us. Children from Helen and Douglas House and their carers came specifically for the low noise display, and 2 or 3 of the kids said that was the best night of their lives. That's the sort of thing you do it for." The main event was a 20-minute pyro musical main show, which came after hours of fun following the gates opening at 4:30 p.m., from which point entertainment was on offer from Hebburn's Funfair. The entertainment specialists cater for the fun at many Oxfordshire events and have been operating for decades out of High Wycombe in Buckinghamshire. To keep the crowds going before the big display, a fully licensed bar and hot food and drink options from local vendors and businesses were available on site. Oxford Round Table, a branch of the National Round Table charity, which meets all over the UK, is open to men aged 18 to 45 and stands for fun, friendship and service in our communities. The city's Round Table has raised more than £1 million for charities in the area since it launched in 1967 and hopes to add to this total again in 2025. More than 30 charities will benefit from the money raised, the total of which has not yet been revealed. Next year's event is set to take place on November the 7th.
Multiple arrests have been made after a suspect kidnap and theft of $1.5 million of cryptocurrency. Thames Valley Police said on Tuesday that 2 men and 3 women were travelling from Oxford to London when the alleged incident took place on the afternoon of the 4th of November. While the vehicle was in Oxford, a number of men in face coverings reportedly entered the vehicle and stole a watch worth around $590,000, as well as phones from the alleged victims. In addition, the suspects are alleged to have forced one of the victims to transfer $1.5 million of cryptocurrency out of their account. After half an hour, the suspects are alleged to have left the vehicle in the 5 Mile Drive area of North Oxford, and the police were called. Police said a black BMW Saloon, a blue Hyundai Iconic, and a silver Mercedes-Benz Vito cars were alleged to have been involved in the incident. The reported incident occurred in the area of Yarnton Road and Sandy Lane, between Kidlington and Yarnton, as well as 5 Mile Drive, Carey Close, Rotherfield Road and Kirk Close in Oxford, between 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. Investigating Officer Detective Sergeant Stuart McMaster said, "Thames Valley Police has been conducting a thorough investigation into the offences. This has included house-to-house, CCTV, ANPR, digital, forensic, cryptocurrency and financial inquiries. We have also conducted warrants in London and Birmingham, along with arrests in Kent, arresting 4 men. We are supporting the victims and keeping them updated during our complex investigation. The 4 men arrested include a 21-year-old from London who was taken into custody on suspicion of conspiracy to commit robberies, kidnap, and other driving offences. He has been released on police bail until January the 14th, 2026. In addition, a 37-year-old man from London and a 23-year-old man from Kent have been arrested on suspicion of robbery and kidnap. The former has been released on police bail until the 30th of January 2026, and the latter until February the 7th, 2026. Finally, a 19-year-old man from Birmingham has been arrested on suspicion of robbery, kidnap and possession of articles for use in fraud. He has been released on police bail until the 29th of January 2026.
Oxford City Council is urging residents to take part in a new survey to help shape a fairer, more inclusive city. The survey will focus on skills, employment and opportunity in the city, where not everyone has access to good jobs and training. Barriers such as childcare and transport problems, as well as lack of local opportunities, have been highlighted as issues. Local businesses have also reported difficulties in finding skilled staff. The Skills of Inequality Resident Survey, which takes just a few minutes to complete, will gather information on the types of jobs and training people want to see, the biggest obstacles they face in accessing work and learning, and the types of support that would make a difference. The Council is particularly keen to hear from people in Barton and Sandhills, Rose Hill and Iffley, Littlemore and Blackbird Leas. Responses will contribute to the Council's new skills strategy, which will be developed in collaboration with schools, employers and community organisations. The strategy aims to provide targeted action to help residents secure rewarding employment and build stronger, more inclusive economy. This survey is open to all residents aged 18 to 64 and can be accessed on the Council's consultation platform until February the 15th, 2026. Councillor Susan Brown, leader of Oxford City Council, said, "Oxford is a city of innovation and growth, but we know that this isn't always felt by everyone who lives here. That's why we want to directly hear from you, from the local people, whether or not you're just starting out on your career journey, looking for work, or thinking about a career change or hoping to build new skills. Your voice will help shape future support training programmes and job opportunities that work for you and your local community. Your views will help to inform our local work with partners across the city to make sure the right opportunities are available for local people. Known for its world-class research and innovation, Oxford still has many residents who face barriers to accessing good jobs and training. The Council hopes that by gathering information direct from residents, it can better tailor its support to meet the needs of the community. This in turn is expected to help businesses find the skilled staff they need locally, creating a more robust and inclusive local economy. The Council is working alongside local schools, employers and community organisations to develop the skills strategy. The survey is open to anyone aged 18 to 64, with questions focusing on the types of jobs and training residents want to see, the biggest barriers they face in accessing work or learning, and the types of support that would make a difference."
More than 500 children at Busy Bees Nurseries in Oxford are pledging 250,000 acts of kindness. The initiative is part of the UK-wide Great Kindness Swarm campaign, which aims to inspire acts of kindness and raise funds for BBC children in need. Busy Bees, the UK's largest early years provider, is encouraging its 47,000 children, educators and colleagues across more than 350 nurseries to each complete 6 thoughtful acts. These range from sharing toys and helping friends to giving back to their local communities. This initiative is part of the ongoing partnership with BBC Children in Need, supporting the charity's Challenge Yourself to 25 initiatives. The partnership aims to inspire children, families and staff to make a positive impact, one act at a time. To date, Busy Bees has raised over £110,000 for BBC Children in Need. This year, the Great Kindness Swarm aims to raise even more. Chris McCandless, European CEO at Busy Bees, said, "We're proud to see our Great Kindness Swarm buzzing around the country. Our children are discovering that even the smallest act of kindness can spark something bigger in their nurseries, their communities and beyond. Every Busy Bee taking part in helping to create a brighter future and making a real difference for BBC Children in Need." The area director at Busy Bees Oxford Nurseries said, Our children have loved finding creative ways to be kind, from baking treats for neighbours to planting kindness flowers. Together, these small gestures will create a powerful wave of hope, joy and generosity. It's wonderful to see how proud they are to help other children through BBC Children in Need. Claire Hoyle, Director of Income and Engagement at BBC Children in Need, commented, "We first partnered with Busy Bees last year to support children to thrive and be the best they can be. What a year it's been. From Giggle-a-thons to the Great Kindness Swarm, Busy Bees has been raising the bar on fun and creative fundraisers. We are so thrilled to be working with Busy Bees again for this year's appeal and look forward to seeing children and families across the UK get involved with this wonderful initiative. BBC Children in Need funding helps ensure every child has someone they can turn to for help or support to overcome challenges they face. Every day, BBC Children in Need's 1,400 projects all across the UK are helping to make life lighter for the children and young people carrying a load that's too heavy to manage alone. See justgiving.com/page/busybees-national to donate.
A Christmas light bus is set to bring festive cheer to the streets once again. The City Sightseeing Oxford vehicle, decorated with hundreds of twinkling lights, will tour neighbourhoods in December, and the public can now vote on which areas it should visit. The illuminated bus, organised by Oxford Bus Company, City Sightseeing Oxford and Thames Travel in partnership with Get Radio, will travel through selected communities on December the 12th, 13th, 19th and 20th, between 4 p.m. and 8 p.m. Luke Marion, Managing Director at Oxford Bus Group, said, "This time of year is always a special one for the community and us as a community-spirited business. The Christmas light bus spreads so much festive joy and gives the community something to look forward to. It's not possible to visit every single area, but we're offering people the opportunity to have a say in where we go, and I'd encourage people to get involved and vote for their neighbourhood. The bus will play Christmas classics courtesy of Get Radio and stop at selected locations, where Oxford Bus Group volunteers will hand out treats, including vegan and gluten-free options to children and adults. Two routes will be created based on the most popular answers. Voting is open until 11:59 p.m. on November the 30th. Final routes will be announced on December the 8th via the Oxford Bus Company website and social media channels. Each person is allowed one vote and duplicates will be removed."
Nationwide branches to stay open. Three bank branches in Oxfordshire will remain open until 2030, it's been confirmed. It comes as the company announced that it will continue to keep every one of its 696 Nationwide and Virgin Money branches open until at least 2030, despite many other banks closing theirs. The new commitment, which extends the existing branch promise by at least another 2 years, applies even when a Nationwide branch and a Virgin Money branch are close to each other. Nationwide's move comes as other banks continue their bank branch closure programmes, the largest in UK history. Earlier this week, the company published a list where Nationwide is the last branch in town. The branches in Henley, Wallingford and Thame are included on the list. The company says branch closures have a disproportionate impact on the vulnerable customers, including older people, many of whom rely on face-to-face services and support. It added that younger people rely on branches too, with more than 1 in 10 of Nationwide's new student accounts being opened in branches this new academic year. Dame Debbie Crosby, DBE, Group Chief Executive at Nationwide, said, "Our customers can be confident that they can bank with us whichever way they choose."
A woman has told a jury she saw a teenager punch and kick a man on the ground 6 times. Tia Pomeroy and Mason Robbins are said to have attacked Peter Crowley outside the Underhill Circus shops in Barton on April 23rd, 2022. He was found dead in his flat the following day, with the case initially treated by police as a murder investigation. However, this was dropped when it was discovered that the 50-year-old's cause of death was due to alcohol, liver disease and drug intoxication. Tia Pomeroy, 19, of Stoford Road, Headington, and Robbins, 20, of Valentia Road, Headington, have denied attempting to cause grievous bodily harm, an alternative count of causing actual bodily harm, and 2 counts of intended to pervert the course of justice. The others are also in trial, with the prosecution alleging they attempted to conceal Tia Pomeroy and Robbins from police and dispose of evidence. They are Tia Pomeroy's mother, Michaela Pomeroy, 33, of Stoford Road, Headington, her father, Morton, 34, of Bayswater Road, Headington, and Bobby Davenport, 33, of Viregate, Drayton, Abingdon. They have each denied 2 counts of intending to pervert the course of justice. On November 17th, the jury heard evidence from Ruby Otto. The jury was told that Miss Otto did not want to give evidence in the trial and had been arrested on Saturday, November 15th, in order to be brought to court. Miss Otto told the jury she knew of Mr. Crowley and she did know Tia Pomeroy and Mr. Robbins. She told the jury she had been with a group of friends on the evening in question near the Underhill Circus shops. Miss Otto said, "I saw Tia. She was standing over Peter. I saw her punch Peter and kick him. He was on the floor. He was lying down." Asked how many hits she saw, Miss Otto said, "It was more than one, about 6 times. She indicated she saw 6 kicks as well. Miss Otto said she also saw Robin standing next to her. She also said she saw Raymond Bulger, who previously gave evidence in the trial, standing next to Mr. Crowley. She said he was telling Tia to stop. Peter's mate helped him up and took him back to his home. Miss Otto said that she headed back to the shops after this, where she saw Tia Pomeroy and Robbins again. She claimed that Tia Pomeroy threatened one of her friends. Laura Collier, Tima Pomeroy's defence barrister, asked Miss Otto about her arrest. Miss Collier said, "You are saying this because you are fed up and want to stick the knife in." Miss Otto replied, "Yes." When asked if she was making up the part about the kicks and punches, she answered, "No." The trial continues.
The second golden toilet, created as a pair to the one stolen from Blenheim Palace in an infamous theft, has been sold at auction for $12 million. Maurizio Cathalan's America, made in 2016, went under the hammer at Sotheby's in New York, where it sold to its only bidder for a price just over the toilet's weight in gold, more than £9,170,000, including fees. The work weighs just over 100 kilograms and contains roughly 2,440 ounces of gold, worth approximately $9.9 million, or just over £7.5 million, and is a fully functioning toilet. Before the sale, it was displayed in a private bathroom, where potential bidders viewed it one by one. But unlike previous displays in New York and Oxfordshire, it was not available for use. The toilet's counterpart, the other of the only 2 fabricated examples of the sculptor, was on display in Blenheim Palace in Woodstock when it was stolen in a shocking smash and grab. Worth £4.75 million, it was never recovered following the theft, but 2 men have since been jailed for the crime. In June, 40-year-old James Sheen from Northamptonshire was sent to jail for 4 years for the theft, and Michael Jones, 39, from Oxford, was sentenced to 27 months in jail for his part too. Fred Doe, 36, from Windsor, was also convicted of conspiracy to transfer criminal property and given a suspended sentence. Judge Ayn Pringle, KC, called it a bold and brazen theft, but Sheen's defence counsel, Geoffrey Israel, said in mitigation, both the planning and execution were incredibly basic, effective but basic. Although it was brazen, it was not a sophisticated heist.
A festive pop-up shop selling charity Christmas cards has opened for the season. Cards for Good Causes, the UK's largest multi-charity Christmas card and gift retailer, has set up a shop in Oxford Town Hall. With Christmas fast approaching, the retailer is encouraging people to shop at their pop-up to raise money for over 80 national and local charities and more than 120 community spaces. Cards for Good Causes has raised more than £20 million for charities in the past 10 years, supporting a wide range of causes including mental health services, hospices, cancer research, children's charities and animal welfare organisations. Christine Ansell, CEO of Cards for Good Causes, said, "Each card and gift purchased in our shops makes a real difference. Not only do you support the charities we work with, but you also help keep community spaces like Oxford Town Hall alive by shopping locally. For those who can't make it to the pop-up shop, the full product range is available online at the Cards for Good Causes website."
Remember Super Saturday at the 2012 London Olympics when three British athletes, Jess Ennis, Greg Rutherford and Mo Farah, won gold medals in the space of just 45 minutes? "A 12-year-old girl in Kidlington could not take her eyes off the TV screen," writes Stuart Weir. Fast forward 12 years and that Kidlington girl was at the Paris Olympic Stadium, but this time she was competing. She described herself as part of the 2012 legacy. Jade O'Dowdy was so smitten by athletics, she asked her parents if she could have a try, and she was taken to horse bath. She started going two evenings a week and found it fun. She recalls being part of a group of children doing about four events every night, with a bit of running at the end, just to tire you out. The heptathlete remembers Oxford City's chairman telling her parents that they were worried about her because no matter how much they asked her to do, they never seemed able to tire her out. Oxford City was really important to her development, as was meeting Mauricio Marriott, who talked to her about heptathlon. As Jess Ennis had been her inspiration, it seemed a natural progression to start heptathlon, which consisted of seven events: 100-metre hurdles, 200 metres, 800 metres, high jump, long jump, javelin and shot, with times and distances converting to points to provide an overall winner. Her first recorded competitions were in 2012, an 800 metre and a long jump. But by 2013, she was attempting and winning a pentathlon, five events normally done indoors. By 2017, she was competing in the World Under-20s. After school at Gosford Hill, she took a degree in geography and a master's in international relations at Sheffield, linking up with current coach John Lane. After university, she became a professional athlete. She said, "I think 12-year-old me would have never had thought that she'd been able to make money from it." From then on, it was steady progress with a bronze medal at the 2022 Commonwealth Games and 10th place at the Olympic Games in 2024. This year, she finished 4th at the European Indoors and 8th at the World Championships heptathlon event. Coming 12 years after being inspired by the London Olympics, she found herself in the Paris Olympics. She told us it was incredible, quite daunting, walking out for hurdles at the first event. "I hadn't gone to the stadium beforehand. I remember being stood in the tunnel before my hurdles race, and then I walked out and I think my mouth just dropped. and I felt like I was at the bottom of this cauldron with loads of people staring at me. And yeah, I just remember looking around and thinking, how the hell has little Jade got here? To finish 10th in the Olympics left her with mixed feelings. It was an amazing experience, yet knowing that if she had not been injured for much of the year, she could have done much better. She describes 2025 as a really good year, but there again, there is a tinge of frustration. Fourth in the European Indoor Pentathlon, so close to medal but not quite. The final event is the 800, and she just needed to be a little faster for the medal. Winter injuries had left her short of 800-metre endurance training. The 26-year-old heptathlete said, "It was frustrating because I know I'm capable of doing more, and I'm a bit gutted that I wasn't able to show it. It was like dangling a carrot in front that I just missed. As frustrated as I was able to take a lot from it." She is already into winter training and feeling confident for 2026, which is a big year for great British athletes, with a World Indoors in Poland in March, a Commonwealth Games in Glasgow, July 23rd to August the 2nd, and European Championships in Birmingham, August the 10th to 16th. She told us that in 2025 was the first year for a few years that she had finished a season injury-free and was therefore able to start winter training healthy.
The Mozart Symphony Orchestra is set to perform a Christmas classic in Oxford. On Sunday, December the 21st, the orchestra will bring its festive concert from London's West End to the Sheldonian Theatre. For one day only, the orchestra will provide the soundtrack to Raymond Briggs' iconic film, The Snowman, with the movie being shown on the big screen. Alice McKenzie, aged 16, will make her 10th appearance with the orchestra, singing the renowned song, Walking in the Air. Alice, who has been performing this role professionally since she was 8, will recreate the moment originally made famous by Alan Jones 40 years ago. The film, first shown on December the 26th, 1982, became an immediate hit, securing a nomination for the Academy Award for Best Animated Short Film and winning a BAFTA TV Award. It has since become a staple of Christmas family viewing, with the orchestra performing it in London every year since 2015, except for a brief pause due to the COVID pandemic. Audiences have often remarked on the special experience of watching the film with a live orchestra soundtrack. Also in the programme are The Gruffalo and The Gruffalo's Child, narrated and accompanied by the orchestra, with Axel Scheffler's famous illustrations displayed on the big screen. The Snowman and The Gruffalo in concert promises to be a Christmas treat for all the family. Tickets for The Snowman are available from Tickets Oxford, with performances at 1:30 p.m., 3:30 p.m. and 5:30 p.m.
The Oxfordshire-based RAF Falcons have begun training for their 2026 display season. The world-famous parachute display team, which usually operates out of RAF Bryce Norton, are currently in California, taking part in Exercise Freefall Endeavour, the first of two major training drills ahead of their summer performances. The exercise focuses on freefall skydiving skills and qualifications used both in public displays and RAF parachute instruction. The team's dedicated survival equipment technicians play a vital role in supporting the team throughout the training. Corporal Dyson, one of the technicians, said, "We've been preparing the equipment prior to the team starting their free fall training at Skydive Perris. During the trip, we will continually ensure the serviceability of the parachutes, changing components and performing regular checks on the kit. The job is very physical, maintaining the equipment hands-on, but also involves a lot of documentation and logistics. Every component change, every descent must be logged. Our main role is to keep people safe and ensure the team have the right kit to gain their qualifications. In addition to maintaining parachutes and related gear, the technicians supervise civilian staff at the Sky Dive Center in California. RAF Bryce Norton is the largest RAF station in the UK and is home to around 5,800 service personnel and 300 civilian staff.
A film production taking place later this month will see roads closed in a West Oxfordshire village. Filming takes place in Great Chew near Chipping Norton by Charlie Grout Smith of Fixer CMG. The order has been made in the interest of public safety and to exclude vehicles at risk of causing conflict with the filming operations and personnel, says Oxfordshire County Council. The road closures will be in place from 6 a.m. on Sunday until 12 noon next Tuesday. They will also be in place from 6 a.m. on Sunday, December the 7th, until 12 noon on Tuesday, December the 9th. The road closures are the lane from New Road to the end of the Triangle Green, the lane from Triangle Green to the junction with Brook Road and Old Road, New Road, north of the junction near Great Chew Primary School, leading onto the lane, Brook Road from the junction with the lane stroke Old Road to number 39 Brook Road, Old Road from the junction of the lane stroke Brook Road to the approximately 70 metres south of the junction, and the square from Old Road Junction to approximately 30 metres past the Falkland Arms pub garden. Exemptions will apply to emergency services, controlled property access and vehicles and machinery necessary for the event.
Hello, my name is Willow and I live in a lovely town called Shaftesbury in the county of Dorset in southern England. Just want to tell you a little bit about nature around my area and a foggy walk that I had one recent day. Not been walking but swimming about this week. It's been pretty rainy. Might get a boat for the future. Anyway, one of my favourite nature observing times this week was early-ish on Saturday morning. As I stepped out of my front door, a pair of jackdaws called and flew to a nearby roof. Going into my garden first, I was absolutely astounded by the countless spider webs all over the place. Different sorts of webs everywhere. It was really foggy and the water droplets hanging on them was making the garden sparkle. I spent ages looking at everything in the garden. It just had a fairy tale feel to it. It's also really great to see wildlife making their homes in my bug hotel. As a beachcomber, old dump digger and collector of all sorts of nature things, I love seeing how things make their homes in the stuff I put in my garden. As I finished appreciating the sparkling webs of the spiders and just in general in my garden, I walked out down the woods, which are just a mere minute's walk from my home. I live in a new estate on the edge of some woodlands, which is really beautiful. I loved it today because particularly the fog meant that you could only take in the nearby. There were no views across the path as usual, no vistas to be gazed on of the fields beyond the woods as you can usually see. Everything was close up. It felt intimate, still and quiet, but with the life absolutely in abundance everywhere around me. Fog definitely gives another otherworldly magical feel to life for me. So imagine this, there was a boundary bank with old gnarled hazel trees reaching out towards me. And there were fungi coloured grey and ochre, earthy colours, popping up underneath amongst the earth, surrounding some of their exposed roots. I didn't see any fairy sitting on top, but it was definitely easy to imagine them hiding from me and appearing back on the caps of the mushrooms once I'd left the area. And on the other side of the path, beech trees with their grey and textured bark, reaching out to hold the hands of the hazels on the other side, creating a tunnel for me to walk through. And all I could hear were my own footsteps, an occasional pheasant calling through the mist, and along with the water droplets coming down with the leaves that still hung on through the high winds we've had, just dripping down. That's all I could hear, and it was so lovely. Heading back up the farm track, greeting dog walkers, both on their way and their way back from their walks, I heard a wren singing. Such a tiny little bird with a very, very loud song. I then wandered straight into town to enjoy a coffee. What a wonderful morning, simply relaxing Saturday morning. That's my idea of a lovely time. I hope you enjoyed this walk with me. And I'll end it with one of the few poems that came to me whilst I was out there today. I walk in stillness, the stillness and I. As we walk, the woods. I'm now eye to eye with the quiet breath of the trees mixed in with my own. In my brick house and these woods, I feel quite at home. I hope you enjoyed this walk down the woods with me in Shaftesbury, Dorset. Bye.
A former Tottenham Hotspur and Manchester City teenager has ditched football to study at Oxford University. Han Wilhoff-King was coached under the likes of Pep Guardiola and Antonio Conte, but chose to leave the sports behind for education. The 19-year-old had been with Tottenham Hotspur since the age of six after he had seen playing grassroots football for TFA. Coached by City legend Yaya Toure, Wilhoff-King rose through the ranks at Spurs and even took part in their first team training sessions under Conte. The midfielder was also capped twice by England at under-16 level back in 2021 before he moved to the under-21s at the Etihad Stadium in 2024. Injuries caused problems for the teenager, making him endure a four-month layoff stretch out last campaign at City. Wilhoff-King is now studying a law degree at Brasenose College and has explained the reasoning behind the switch to The Guardian. "I wasn't enjoying it," he said. "I don't know what it was. Maybe the environment. I'm bored often as well. You'd train, you'd come home, and you wouldn't really do anything. If in contrast to it now, I'm struggling to find hours in the day. I'm either studying, going out with friends, playing for the university team, also my college." Former Norwich City, Leeds United and Birmingham City footballer Tom Adeyemi is another player who moved into academia from the professional game, studying an MBA at Harvard Business School. Wilhoff-King added, "I always felt understimulated in football. Don't get me wrong, I still love it, but I always felt I could be doing more. I was wasting hours of the day. I needed something different, and Oxford excited me. The people too. I guess that's the reason. Injuries were a big factor, but that's the easy answer. I felt I needed something a bit more, mainly intellectually, which sounded quite pretentious." The 19-year-old chose to apply to several universities at the beginning of the season, and Oxford was one of his picks. He said, "Also, best case scenario, you'll play for 10, 15 years, and after that, what? I thought going to university would provide a platform for me to do something at least for longer than the next 10 to 15 years. So it's a bit of a long-term thing as well." Then in January, Wilhoff-King was offered a place at the school following an interview. This came after the young footballer completed his A-levels earlier in the year, achieving stellar grades across the board. The former Spurs and City star earned grades of A-star, A-star, A in maths, economics and history to help him get to Oxford.
An Oxford fish and chip shop has spoken out as history beckons. Last week, it was announced that Harrison's Fish and Chips on Elms Parade, Botley, had taken another step towards the best takeaway in the country prize. It was named within the top 10 establishments by the National Fish and Chip Awards, a competition organised by the National Federation of Fish Fryers. According to Ryan Harrison, this is the first time that there has been an Oxfordshire shop competing at this stage. He said, "We are absolutely thrilled and over the moon to make it into the final 10. We've worked incredibly hard this year, taking all the feedback from last year on board. And it's amazing to see that dedication pay off. There's still more judging ahead, but we're excited for the awards ceremony in February 2026. As the competition reaches the final, entrants will face an unannounced visit by an industry specialist, as well as an in-depth interview. This will decide the two runners-up and the overall winner, who will be awarded their prizes at a London ceremony on February the 25th, 2026. Mr. Harrison added that, in the face of spiralling costs, the fish and chip shop is offering better value options.
Notice to listeners of Oxhawk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to Oxhawk on an Alexa device, you can use the talking newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill To do this, simply say, Alexa, enable talking newspaper. Then, to listen to OxTalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open talking newspaper.
Welcome to your talking newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper, or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to OxTalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help.
The Bishop of Oxford, the Right Reverend Dr. Stephen Croft, has announced he will retire in July next year. After 10 years of diocesan bishop for the Diocese of Oxford, Bishop Stephen will lay down his crozier at a service at Christ Church Cathedral on the 31st of May. Bishop Stephen's retirement means he will also step down from his place in the House of Lords. In 2022, the bishop published Together in Love and Faith. In doing so, he became the most senior figure in the Church of England to support same-sex marriage. Reflecting on 17 years as bishop, seven of them in Sheffield and latterly in Oxford, Bishop Stephen said, "It has been and remains an immense joy and privilege to serve as Bishop of Oxford, and I am deeply thankful for God's grace in so many different people and communities across the diocese." He added, "My own retirement from this role will come shortly after my 69th birthday, and therefore in my 70th year. By God's grace, it will mark exactly a decade as Bishop of Oxford and 17 years as a diocesan bishop in two very different dioceses, including 13 years as a member of the House of Lords. This has been and remains an enormously privileged role in which I have learned so much from so many lay and ordained colleagues, past and present. I am deeply thankful for the ministries of so many people called to sustain the life and mission of churches, chaplaincies and schools across Oxfordshire, Berkshire and Buckinghamshire. I have appreciated so many opportunities to interact with so many civic, university and faith leaders across our three counties." In 2009, Bishop Stephen was consecrated as Bishop of Sheffield and became Bishop of Oxford in 2016. Bishop Stephen became a member of the House of Lords in October 2013. And was a member of the Select Committee on Artificial Intelligence in 2017. He was a founding board member for the UK Government's Centre for Data Ethics and Innovation and writes extensively on issues of online safety and digital ethics. Bishop Stephen also speaks passionately, both on his blog and in the House of Lords, on the need to make the gig economy a fairer, safer environment, particularly for the sake of today's young adults. A leading advocate of fossil fuel divestment within the National Church, in April 2021, Bishop Stephen was among 13 peers appointed to the Lord's Select Committee for the Environment and Climate Change. He has previously called for nothing less than an ecological conversation of every person and every part of society. Sir Hector Sants, Chairman of the Oxford Diocesan Board of Finance, said, "We give thanks to God for Bishop Stephen's faithful ministry over the past 10 years. He has embodied our vision to become a more Christ-like church and has led with contemplation, compassion and courage."
Villagers have been left distraught after a spate of burglaries. Thames Valley Police are investigating two burglaries which both occurred last week in Ensham. The first one, in which three males have gained access to the garden of a property in Shakespeare Road by breaking through a fence, happened on Friday at about 7 p.m. Police say the men smashed the window to the rear door of the home and gained entry before conducting a messy search of one of the rooms and further search to a bedroom. Then they left through the front of the property. At this time, it's not known what has been stolen, the police force added. The second burglary, in which offenders gained entry to a property on Newland Street using a tool to force the frame and lock of her rear door, took place between 10:30 a.m. on the same day and 4 p.m. on Saturday. After gaining access, they conducted a search of a bedroom, stealing jewellery, huge sentimental value from within, said the police force. The crime reference numbers for the incidents are 432-50-58-4151 and 432-505-84132, respectively. A spokesperson for Thames Valley Police said these offences have left the victims distraught and scared in their own homes. If you have any information with regards to either of these burglaries or any CCTV or dashcam footage from either location that you may feel could help with the investigation, please call 101, quoting the relevant crime reference numbers.
Fears have been voiced that the illegal waste dump near Kidlington, which has been billed as the UK's biggest ever, will burst into flames. Green councillor Ian Middleton is pressing for action to be taken with urgency to deal with the giant fly-tipped rubbish heap next to the A34 and the River Charwell before it becomes hazardous with toxic emissions or fires. It comes as charity Friends of the Thames launched a petition demanding urgent action to clear up the dumping ground, which it describes as an environmental catastrophe. Described as Britain's biggest fly tip, the site is 10 metres high, 15 metres wide and 60 metres long, and contains hundreds of tons of rubbish, and is on a site bordered by a tributary of the River Charwell. Mr Middleton, who sits on Charwell District and Oxfordshire County Councils, is appalled at the brazen crime. Those responsible for this need to be brought to justice, he said. We understand that investigating this crime is a complex process, and we are supportive of the work specialist officers at the Environment Agency are doing. But months have now passed since it was first reported, and a full clean-up is now a matter of extreme urgency beyond the remit and resources of local authorities. As the authority responsible for waste disposal, the County Council should have a role, but the sheer scale means it's going to need government intervention and funding, especially given the extreme urgency of dealing with it before it impacts the river or becomes hazardous in other ways, such as toxic emissions or even spontaneous combustion. A petition from charity Friends of the Thames calling for urgent action launched this week and has already garnered more than 3,000 signatures. It raised three specific critical threats facing the environment from the rubbish. First is toxic hydrogen sulfide emissions, posing an immediate health hazard to anyone living or working near the waste ground. As water laps at the base of the rubbish mound and gets closer to the floodplain site with every rainfall, the charity also said a generation of highly poisonous leachate is already entering the River Charwell and will soon contaminate further downstream where the river feeds into the Thames. The third critical issue is plastic pollution, endangering aquatic ecosystems and fish, bird and invertebrate populations. Mr Middleton added, I'm going to contact the chief executive later to ask what Oxfordshire County Council can do. I'm also writing to the Environment Agency to urge them to act, but they will need government support given the scale and urgency.
Journalist Emma Brennan shares her memories of what we collected and why. I recently visited a bric-a-brac and collectible shop, and as is so often the case nowadays, I found lots of items similar to those I owned as a child. Despite my advancing years, I still can't believe ornaments from the 1970s and 1980s are now classed as vintage. Among the vintage paraphernalia in this intriguing marketplace was a basket of whimsy pottery animals. Most people of a certain age will have owned at least one of these little solid English porcelain figures, which were made by Wade Pottery Company from 1950s to the 1980s. I was delighted to see these as they were some of the only things I collected as a child in the 1970s. This was mainly because they were affordable and featured my favourite cute animals among the 60 or so that were available over the years. There was no sense of scale. It also got me thinking about other items we collected in our youth and why we did so. People amass collections for different reasons, some for the rush of seeking out rare items, while others collect things that are linked to a hobby. Then there's the social side of sharing your passion with other collectors. As kids, we mostly accumulated anything affordable, or better still, free. In addition to the whimsies, I'm thinking of those lovely picture cards that came in boxes of Tetley or Brooke Bond tea. I'd always be asking my nan to open a new box of tea so I could bag the card before one of my cousins got in on the act. And then there were the football-related metal coins that were free from the Esso petrol station in the early 1970s. Some of my contemporaries collected football stickers or match programmes, while the boffins preferred to collect stamps. Other relatively cheap items to collect were magazines or comics. Mostly kids had a comic of some sort in the 1970s. There was a lot of commemorative memorabilia to collect in those days. At school, we were given metal coins to mark the marriage of Prince Charles and Lady Diana Spencer, the Queen's Jubilee in 1977, and one from 1980 to mark the Queen Mother's 80th birthday. I still have these, although you can't really call three a collection. From the age of 13, my cousin Gail collected thimbles, which I always thought was an unusual one. Going back even further to the 1940s, my lovely mum collected posters of her favourite film stars of the day. She said, "I had a few, including Rock Hudson, Margaret Lockwood, Cary Grant and James Stewart, but my favourite was Gregory Peck. I had a really dreamy picture of him, which took pride of place over the fireplace we had in our bedroom." It got me wondering what young people collect now that life is largely digital. As my other half pointed out, it's not as if they can collect Instagram posts or YouTube videos in the way we collected comics or football programmes. I'm so grateful to have grown up in a time when aspirations were more modest. And it's amazing how seeing a collection of something as humble as my cute whimsy animals transported me right back to those days when we were more than satisfied with a picture of a butterfly from a tea box.
A major clean-up operation took place at a fire station after crews were called to remove sewage flood water from an office basement in central Oxford. Crews from Ensham Fire Station were called to the incident on Friday afternoon. It came as several spots in the county were hit by flooding, following heavy rainfall from Storm Claudia. They subsequently had to clean up and decontaminate equipment at the station. A spokesperson for Ensham Fire Station said Ensham's Incident Support Unit carries special water pumping equipment that assists crews across Oxfordshire with flooding incidents. The unit is also regularly called out to board up and secure properties that have been damaged by fire and to provide lighting for night incidents.
Tesco stores are helping spread festive cheer by collecting toys for children in need. The scheme is running at the Bicester Superstore until December the 15th and is part of a national campaign to support families across the UK. Amara Omagher Sheriff store manager at Tesco Bicester, said, "We take pride in supporting our local community during the year through Tesco Stronger Starts and our Food Community Connection Programme. This year's toy donation campaign is a fantastic way for customers to help local families and ensure children in our community have something to open on Christmas Day. We are so grateful to our customers who donate what they can to help bring a little festive joy to local families this Christmas. The store is collecting new, unwrapped toys for the Oxfordshire Foster Carers Association, which will distribute them to local children. The scheme is part of Tesco's wider toy donation campaign, with more than 800 large stores across the UK taking part. Claire De Silva, head of communities at Tesco, said, "Our stores are committed to supporting local children and their communities year-round, and thanks to the generosity of our customers and colleagues, the annual toy donation campaign is a wonderful way to make a difference at Christmas. It's great to see Tesco Bicester partnering with Oxfordshire Foster Carers Association this year to ensure that every child experiences the magic of Christmas."
A decision to allow Marks & Spencer to open a new food hall in Abingdon has prompted a leading councillor to call for improvements to the town centre. The popular High Street brand submitted a planning application to convert the former home base units at Fairacres Retail Park into the food hall, and it was given the go-ahead. The retail site spans more than 18,000 square feet, and the application comes as part of M&S's rotation and renewal programme. Abingdon South County Councillor Neil Fawcett welcomed the decision and added there should now be a renewed focus on improving the town centre, particularly the precinct. The application was approved by Vale of Whitehorse District Council planners a week ago, and the chain will now begin preparing the unit to open for customers at a date to be fixed. No opening date has yet been revealed. The M&S application attracted opposition from the owners of the town's Bury Street precinct, Sunny Day Gentian, which claimed if M&S moves into the retail park, regeneration plans for the charter area next to the precinct would be compromised. Many shoppers, however, urged Vale Council planners to approve the application. One shopper replied, "Great news at long last. This has made my day. No more going to Didcot for M&S." The precinct owners said earlier that there would be a £3.5 million trade draw from the town centre following the arrival of M&S. Mr Fawcett welcomed the new M&S food hall, saying it would add to the retail offer for Abingdon as a whole. But he added it was now time to focus on improving the town centre, particularly the charter area which leads to the precinct. Mr Fawcett said that he would work to get the Central Abingdon Regeneration Framework, CARF, documents back on the table at Vale Council. CARF sets out options for how areas of the town centre could be redeveloped, but there are areas to have been, little progress with the scheme for years. There has been a number of large empty units in the Bury Street precinct, including the former Peacocks unit. Mr Fawcett added, councillors will continue to push for the charter redevelopment to move forward. One possibility is a bigger and more modern library. Ian Collett, owner of the book store in the precinct, said landlords could not force businesses to occupy retail units. He added, the last Labour budget hit the High Street hard, with a triple whammy of increased national insurance contributions, increased minimum wage and a doubling business rates. Abingdon East County Councillor Tom Greenaway welcomed the impending arrival of M&S. He said, I know lots of us were very keen to see this one get signed off, and it's great news.
Magistrates' Court cases won't be held in Oxford for the first half of 2026, due to renovation works. Oxford Magistrates Court will close in January for 6 months to allow work on its building in Speedwell Street. As a result, first stage justice will be shipped off to Reading, High Wycombe and Milton Keynes. This is in the midst of major backlogs in the criminal justice system up and down the country. An HM Courts service spokesperson said, Oxford Magistrates Court would temporarily close in January to allow for vital improvement work to ensure the building is fit for everyone who uses it. Cases will be moved to Reading Magistrates Court, High Wycombe Magistrates Court and Milton Keynes Magistrates Court for the period of the closure. The building will be closed from January the 5th and it will reopen in July. The work includes a roof replacement. The HM Court Service added that it announced a nationwide £148.5 million maintenance programme to tackle the neglected court and tribunal estate. They say this will help speed up justice by reducing the number of courtrooms out of action while improving conditions for all users of the courts and tribunals. Reacting to the news, Oxford West and Abingdon MP Leila Moran said, "Our justice system has been pushed to the brink with crumbling courts and huge backlogs, denying victims the justice they deserve. It is good to see investment in our courts, and I will be keeping a close eye on this project to ensure that delivery stays on track." A Thames Valley Police spokesperson added, "We have been in consultation with His Majesty's Courts and Tribunal Service around the temporary closure of Oxford Magistrates Court since it was confirmed. We are working with them and all other partners to ensure everything is done to mitigate the impact of this on the criminal justice system and users of it. We will continue to support victims and fight crime to keep our communities safe."
Oxford's waste management firm has issued an update on bin collection changes during the cold weather. Advice has been issued for bin collections when temperatures drop below freezing, as the cold weather can affect workers' ability to collect rubbish. It comes as below freezing temperatures continue in Oxfordshire this week, as a UK-wide cold snap hits the county. Oxford Direct Services, ODS, the waste management firm for Oxford City Council, said freezing temperatures can cause bin contents to freeze and get stuck, making it impossible for the bin to be emptied. A statement from the company said, "When temperatures drop below freezing, bin contents can freeze and get stuck, and if that happens, we are unable to empty the bin. If your bin is frozen, we won't be able to return for it, so it will need to wait until your next scheduled collection day. This usually only affects a small number of bins, especially garden waste bins, as the moisture inside can freeze more easily. Advice issued to make sure bins can be collected include giving the bin a shake to loosen anything frozen on the morning of collection and checking that the lid can fully open."
A pub in an Oxfordshire village has been named the dreamiest in the Cotswolds by a visitor. The Royal Oak in Ramsden, about 3 miles from Whitney, has been praised for offering the best food and being a magical place by some of its visitors on TikTok. The video these visitors have commented on was posted by TikTok user Polly Dunseith, she showed the interior of the pub at night with several fairy lights and lamps creating a cosy atmosphere. Captioning the video, she said, "I used to come here with my granny when I was a little girl, and it's still one of the prettiest, most traditional pubs in the Cotswolds, and maybe even England." Adding text to the video, Polly Dunseith encouraged visitors to save the video for the dreamiest pub in the Cotswolds. On its website, the pub, which is a Grade 2 listed building, says, "The Royal Oak sits proudly at the heart of the small, picturesque village of Ramsden, in West Oxfordshire, where it has served as a coaching inn and a public house for almost 250 years. Since the late 1980s, the previous owners were renowned for excellent food, wine and a heart-filled welcome. Now in 2023, the Royal Oak continues to build on its reputation of providing travellers and locals with a warm welcome, great food and a wonderful pint of fine wine."
The latest People's Postcode Lottery draw has been revealed, with one lucky street in Oxfordshire becoming a winner. People's Postcode Lottery has announced that anyone who signed up for the draw, living in OX2 8PT, will be receiving a £1,000 cheque after it was selected in the draw on Tuesday, November the 18th. Postcode in question covers an area in Wolvercote. Subscriptions to the People's Postcode Lottery support various charities across the UK. The lottery is hugely popular nationally and supports a wide range of charities and good causes across Britain and around the world. Prize winners are announced every day, and it costs £12.25 a month to take part.
Most councils in Oxfordshire and West Berkshire have backed a two unitary authority model as the best option for the future local government. 5 out of 7 councils have formally supported the proposal, which aims to improve services, address inefficiencies, and save millions of pounds annually through a major structural overhaul. After considering 3 options, most councils agreed that the two unitary models offer the best outcome for residents. Councillor David Hingey, leader of Charwell District Council, said, "This proposal for two new unitary councils is about creating strong, efficient organisations that remain close to the communities they serve. It offers the right balance between local identity and financial sustainability, large enough to deliver value for money, but local enough to stay connected to residents and businesses. The two unitary option is the most credible and community-focused way to deliver lasting change for Oxfordshire and West Berkshire. The two unitary model is projected to deliver savings of £59.8 million per year, making it the most cost-effective of the options considered. Councils identified several key benefits, including improved services in areas like highways, social care and planning, as well as long-term financial stability. They also believe the model supports sustainable growth across both urban and rural areas. Concerns were raised about the alternative proposals. The single unitary model was criticised as too large and disconnected from communities, while a 3 unitary option was considered financially unsustainable and potentially damaging to Oxford and the surrounding Greenbelt. Councillor Bettia Thomas, leader of the Vale of Whitehorse District Council, said, "This is a once-in-a-generation opportunity, and we need to think about what will truly deliver for our communities, both now and in the future. The 3 unitary option would be devastating for Oxford, the Greenbelt and the surrounding area. Of 158 councillors who voted across the supporting councils, 142 backed the 2 unitary model, with 9 against and 7 abstentions. West Berkshire Council leader, Councillor Jeff Brooks, said the proposal would help address financial pressures whilst maintaining service quality. The proposal will be submitted to the government before the 28th of November deadline, with consultation expected in spring 2026 and a final decision due later in the summer. If approved, the new councils would become fully operational in 2028. Residents can view the full proposals at www.twocouncils.org.
Westgate Oxford has revealed its Christmas lineup of free events this festive season as it announces a programme involving the Grinch and the Snowman. With events on every weekend from the first weekend in December, families will have plenty of chances to enjoy some free festive fun at the Westgate this year. The popular shopping centre is inviting little ones to meet their favourite characters for free this Christmas, including Pingu, the Grinch, the Snowman and the Snow Dog, and more from the 6th of December. These events will take place every weekend until the 21st of December in Leyden Square, and guests have to book their free tickets in advance to secure their spot. Brendan Hatton, Centre Director at Westgate Oxford, said, "The centre truly becomes a magical place during the Christmas season, the perfect setting for our free festive character visits, which are sure to spark nostalgia and joy for young and old alike. We've seen the arrival of some fantastic brands this year, and with so many exciting shopping, dining and leisure options, Westgate Oxford is the ideal family destination this November and December." The full lineup has now been released, with The Gruffalo and the Gruffalo's Child starting off the Christmas event series on Saturday the 6th of December. On the Sunday of the 1st December weekend, Pingu will be at the West Gate to meet guests. The weekend of the 13th and the 14th will see events with Wallace and Gromit and Elves Behaving Badly on the Saturday and the Sunday respectively. And the weekend before Christmas will see visits from festive favourites, the Grinch on Saturday the 20th and the Snowman and Snow Dog on Sunday. Tickets for the events are released 10 days before each weekend of events, and guests can sign up to plus in capital letters and then a plus sign for free on the Westgate Oxford website to get all the information and links. Throughout the festive season, families can enjoy Westgate Oxford's new Alice in Wonderland themed trail, Hatter's Hunt. Produced by the award-winning Story Museum, the trail is completely free and invites guests down a rabbit hole of clues, riddles and surprises to find five plaques hidden throughout the shopping centre in exchange for prizes. All shoppers will get to enjoy having their visits soundtracked by live performances from Oxfordshire-based choirs, including Queen's College A Cappella Group, Rock Choir, Oxford Gospel Choir, String Fever, and Oxfordshire Operatic Society. Plus, shoppers looking for a hand with their present wrapping can have their items wrapped on site when they make a donation to one of Westgate Oxford's charity partners from the 24th of November to the 24th of December. With more than 100 retailers and restaurants at the Westgate, many of which have their own Christmas programmes of events.
Plans to upgrade the sports fields belonging to two University of Oxford colleges were refused by the City Council. Hertford and Exeter College applied for a number of improvements on the sports ground on Edgeway Road in Marston. This includes adding new indoor and outdoor paddle courts, basketball and netball courts, and cricket nets, refurbishing the cricket pavilions, a new golf simulator, cafe and sports hub. The facilities are intended for the use of the residents and students alike, and cycle and car parking would also be included. Oxford City Council's planning committee refused the plans at their meeting on Tuesday, November the 18th. Planning officers recommended the plan should be refused due to concern over flooding, noise disturbance, and that it would fail to preserve the openness of the Greenbelt. Local resident Jennifer Edis spoke against the plans at the meeting, saying it would make it harder for residents to park near their homes and increase levels of traffic, noise and lighting. She added, parking closest to the facility will be almost constant use, making it effectively impossible for residents in this area to park near their homes. The proposal also talks about hosting tournaments and competitions, which will only intensify this problem. Channeling a large volume of additional vehicles, including coaches, into a small number of dead-end residential streets is unsafe and, I would argue, incompatible with the wider transport and environmental policies of this council. Jamie Clark, the bursar of Hertford College, said the plans were carefully thought out, a solution to many years of vandalism and associated antisocial behaviour at our sports grounds, which has left multiple buildings derelict and facilities unusable. He added that he did not agree the plans would fail to preserve the openness of the Greenbelt, and that their proposals would sufficiently deal with flooding, and that the indoor paddle was needed to justify the investment required for the development to go ahead. Nick Badman, bursar of Exeter College, called it a once-in-a-generation opportunity for Marston, which will bring real benefits. Charles Parrick from the New Marston South Residents Association acknowledged that residents had mixed views, but that the group supported the proposal and welcomed improvements to the cycle path. Councillor Anna Railton said she would support the plans going ahead and that she was convinced that the harms would outweigh the benefits. Councillor Emily Carr said she would also support the proposal as long as some conditions were added, such as adding constraints on how late it could stay open. The Environment Agency and the lead local flood authority objected over the lack of detail on how the development would deal with flooding.
A wedding guest has been found guilty of biting a fellow reveller's finger off at an event held inside a pub. Daniel Peasnell, 33, was accused of biting the finger of Stephen Dixon at an event held at the Perch Pub in Binsey Lane in Binsey near Oxford on May 20th, 2023. Peasnell of Richmond Road, Romford, denied the offence of causing grievous bodily harm and affray and now is on trial. However, on Monday, November the 17th, a jury found him guilty by a majority verdict. He'll be sentenced on December the 18th. The jury previously heard evidence from Mr. Dixon. The wedding was that of Mr. Peter Green, who was Mr. Dixon's nephew and a Peasnell's best friend. He said, "I could hear a fracas, something happening. I heard shouting and swearing at first. I heard the impact of a punch or a slap, but I couldn't see it. I heard someone shout, 'Who?' expletive deleted. Wants it. It was Daniel's voice." He told the jury that he wanted to speak to Mr. Green. He came out and they started to walk away together. Mr. Dixon told the jury. He added, "They started arguing and then Daniel went for Peter. He surged towards him. I jumped in to stop it. I took him to the ground and as I went to move, I felt him biting on my finger. He started chewing on my finger. It was agonizing pain. I was screaming. I was then taken back to the bar and the staff dressed my fingers. There was a piece of my finger missing." Peasnell previously gave evidence to the jury. He said that he had been arguing with his partner at the time, Laura McManus. He said, "It was my best mate's wedding. My relationship with alcohol at the time was at its lowest. It was awful. It was completely and utterly intoxicated. I was really boozy event. I don't drink now." He added that Mr. Green approached him with a group of four or five people, including Mr. Dixon. Peasnell then, that Mr. Green told him, "You couldn't behave for one expleted deleted day." He then, Mr. Green punched him in the face before he punched him back. He added, "After I punched him, it was like a melee. I was on the floor. There were punches coming from all directions. I was being punched and kicked repeatedly. I couldn't breathe. Stephen Dixon was trying to rip my cheek." Mr. Coode asked how the tip of Mr. Dixon's finger came off. He said, "I don't know. I couldn't breathe. I was just trying to survive. I bit down. I'm disgusted he was harmed. I didn't want to harm anyone. I never chewed on his finger."
That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, you can telephone Margaret on 074-96-06-2280. That's 074-96-06-2280. Please remember to leave your name and a contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from the previous 4 weeks are available on our website at www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. The current edition is also available on Alexa using the Talking Newspaper skill. Instructions on how to do this are contained in a separate track in this edition. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more news. So until then, we hope you have a good week.